So before we take up a koan tonight, I want to just say a little bit about koan. What are they, and how are they used, and what do they mean, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll start by saying that the fact that there are hundreds, and actually probably around 1,500 or 1,600 or more koan in the compendium of Zen literature, means that Zen acknowledges that words are necessary to teach. These koan are in words. They often depict stories. These are usually historical stories taken from the annals of Zen about events that occurred that are particularly powerful in terms of opening our minds. So the key here, the koan uses words, but it uses them in a strange way, you might almost say poetically. The ordinary analysis of a koan using your thinking, intellectual, conceptual making mind will lead you in circles and eventually frustrate you terribly if you're working with a teacher who's demanding a demonstration, not just an explanation, but a demonstration of your understanding. But the ultimate aim of a koan is to open your mind, to see things in a fresh way. And in working on these koan, although it takes time and effort and often struggle, tears, pulling your hair out, whatever it might be at the moment of your struggle with a koan, the opening to its deep message happens abruptly, suddenly. So also as an entry into the particular koan I'm going to pick up tonight for us to look at, I want to just mention along the lines of this abruptness, the poem for the second rank. So the second rank, there are five ranks of Tozan. These are famous steps or stages that may or may not happen in the particular order they're in. But the second rank, the poem goes like this. A sleepy-eyed grandam encounters herself in an old mirror. Surely she sees a face, but it doesn't resemble hers at all. Too bad with a muddled head she tries to see her own reflection. This is all about us feeling that we are peering out at an outside, solid world. It exists outside us, stands outside us. Now, when this grandam awakens enough, when she rubs the sand out of her eyes and maybe has a cup of coffee and then looks in this old mirror, what does she suddenly notice? Her own face. Happens like that. Sudden. So let's pick up this particular koan, and what I'm going to do is read it through, and then I'm going to go back right to the title and start there, and we're going to go step by step through the case. I don't know if we'll have time to go through the entire thing. So I'm going to read the case. This is from the Mumonkan. This is the collection of koan that I usually will utilize for these Tuesday night sittings. And this is the 19th koan, and the title of it is Ordinary Mind is the Way. And the case goes like this. Joshu asked Nansen. Nansen was a great Zen master of the Tang Dynasty. Joshu later became a great master. So this is when Joshu was Nansen's student. Joshu asked Nansen, what is the way? Nansen answered, your ordinary mind, that is the way. Joshu asked, then how do we get into it? Nansen answered, if you try to direct yourself towards it, you go away from it. Another translation of this statement of Nansen is, the more you seek after it, the more it runs away. Joshu, without conscious intention, how can we attain to a knowledge of the way? Nansen, the way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is an illusion. not knowing is blankness. When you get to this unperplexed way, it is like the vastness of space, an unfathomable void. So how can there be this or that right or wrong in it? At these words, Joshu was suddenly enlightened. So, encountering a koan like this, this is a little bit longer koan. Some of them are just a couple of sentences. How do we dig into this? Well, let's start with the title. Ordinary mind is the way. Now, this is a translation of a Chinese word, Dao. T-A-O is pronounced Dao. And you may have heard of the practice called Taoism. In fact, when Buddhism came to China, and the history of it is via Bodhidharma, the first Zen patriarch, there was a meeting of a religion that arose in India where people's minds were very acute, complex. They saw subtleties, they saw vast numbers, they described meditation in hundreds of ways and various levels of awakening and very, very abstruse and subtle points and names and words and descriptions of mental states. And it came across the ocean to China and admixed with a people who were much more earthy, grounded, solid, farmer types. They didn't have this language. They weren't able to grasp the language of Buddhism. And one of the things that happened is, rather than all these various terms for awakening, they used a single word, Dao. And Taoism was already in operation in China for perhaps hundreds of years before Buddhism came there. So the mixture of these two traditions, if you want to call them, or approaches, was distilled down into a practice called Chan, which in Japan was called Zen, and that's what we're practicing. It's a mixture of the two. But this word Dao roughly means the way. It means a passageway that people and animals might pass through. But it also means a state, a condition, a mode of awareness, a truth with a capital T. So it's an interesting amalgam of both of those, an awakening awareness and a path, a way, a manner. So in China this occurred, and Joshu, who was very young at this point, he was probably 19 years old, I think he became a monk at age 18, and Nansen was probably in his 50s, and he was a very accomplished master. So he asked him, in the manner that another student might ask, what is the Buddha? What is Buddha nature? Or all the different ways it might be described. He used the word Dao. So he said, what is the way? What is Dao? And Nansen answered, your ordinary mind, that is the way. Now, this is probably the very last thing that Joshu thought Nansen would say, this great Zen master. And Joshu had studied Buddhism quite intensely before he came there. He knew all the teachings and all the subtleties and all the names and words and whatever, and felt that that was not leading him anywhere. And he decided to find this master, Nansen, and get onto the real path to awakening. He wanted it badly. He had already done very hard practice. This was not an idle question. Usually when you read these koan, if it isn't a kind of dharma combat where one is testing the other, there's a profound question underlying it. Maybe many tears were shed in the approach to this question. So Nansen said, your ordinary mind, that is the way. Your ordinary mind. And Joshu said, then how do we get onto it? Already he's beginning to miss it. Beginning to miss it. Your ordinary mind is the way. But he thinks it's something to get, something you don't have. Mind, perhaps. What is this mind? Isn't it that thing that knows, that hears, that sees, that smells, that thinks, that has a personality to it, that I have a name for, that inhabits my body and is stuck in my body? So what do you mean, ordinary mind? How do I get into it? Nansen said, if you try to direct yourself towards it, you go away from it. Interesting. You try to direct yourself towards it. Remember, many times I've talked in Taisho about the importance of not using your zazen as a means to achieve something, to change something, to perfect something. That you're coming from a broken place, you're missing something, you're lacking something, and zazen is going to give you this thing that you lack. And that what ends up happening as a result of this approach to zazen is you have a checker on your shoulder watching to see if you're getting there or not getting there. And not only have you previously split yourself into two with a world out here and a self inside, now you've got a self on top of a self. Sometimes in Zen they call it putting a hat on a hat. So we have to really disentangle ourselves from that and begin to settle into what actually is. What actually is. So he, Nansen, says the more you seek after it, the more it runs away. And then Joshu, this is an obvious question then. Well, so you're telling me that ordinary mind is the way. Apparently, that's something I lack because I'm ignorant and you're not. So now you're telling me I can't even move towards it. I'm trying to find out for you, what am I supposed to do? What direction am I supposed to go in? I'm asking you for this teaching, and now you say, if I try to aim for it, if I try to get it, if I try to understand it, it's moving away from me. I'll never get there. What do I do? So he asks, without conscious intention, how can we attain to a knowledge of the way? This is a heartfelt question. Have you ever asked yourself this question? How can I attain to this way? This, as Nansen put it, unperplexed way. This dispassionate way. This way of embracing things as they come. This way of not doing battle with myself all the time. How can I come into a knowledge of that? And Nansen then begins to really cut deep here. He says, the way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. The way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. So we want to know something. What are we looking for? What is it that we don't already know that we're looking for? What are we trying to know? And he says about that, knowing is an illusion. Knowing is an illusion. What does he mean by that? Knowing is an illusion. What is required for knowing? What is required for hearing? What is required for seeing? We think that it requires a person to undergo an action, let's call it hearing, to hear an outside thing called a sound. And then I know the sound. So I know the sound by being here and engaging in an action of knowing. And now Nansen is saying, from the standpoint of the Tao, from the awakened mind, that's an illusion. That there is a hearer, a sound in something called hearing. That there is an idea, a concept, a realization. And the act of realizing, and a person who realizes it and therefore becomes a Buddha. He said, this is an illusion. He also says here, not knowing is blankness. Not knowing is blankness. So the state of being confused, or the state of wiping out any kind of knowing, entering some samadhi state of no form, color, sound, smell, taste, touch. This is called first rank. It's an essential part of our practice. But we can't get all the way to this ordinary mind by staying stuck there. He says, not knowing is blankness. When you get to the unperplexed way, It is like the vastness of space, an unfathomable void. So how can there be this or that, right or wrong? And at this, Joshu had an awakening. How did that happen? He did intense practice. He came with an open heart. He really yearned to know. And this very skillful master pulled rug after rug out from under him. You can't seek after it, it'll run away from you. It's not about knowing. It's not about not knowing. It's an unperplexed way. He said it's like the vastness of space, an unfathomable void. It has no dividing lines. It doesn't stand outside. It isn't a solid, dead object outside an interior self, peering at it, looking at it, hearing it, touching it. What is this? Ordinary way. Ordinary way. Now, how do we use this? This is the important thing. No teacher will give you the quote answer to a koan. That's of no value to you. We have to leave something over, something that you have to really chew on yourself. But this koan should be very helpful to you, should really point you. What is ordinary mind? Ordinary mind. When your hands are in the mudra, is there anything extraordinary about that? When you see the light reflecting off the carpet, is that extraordinary? When you hear the car going down the road outside, is that extraordinary? It's ordinary. Your footsteps during Kinhin are ordinary. These are ordinary. What's extraordinary? All your descriptions, all your judgments, all the rights and wrongs, all the people that have it, all the people that don't have it, all the ideas that you have about your past, what you lack, what your strengths are, what people have done to you, what they're doing to you, what you need to do in order to be happy, that's extraordinary. This is about ordinary, ordinary mind. Now, extraordinary mind is all these ideas, all these concepts. What is ordinary mind? You know it right now. You know it without standing apart from it. Ordinary mind. Look at it closely. You're driving a car, your hands are on the steering wheel. What is ordinary mind? You're running to catch a bus, your footsteps slamming on the pavement. Step, 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 step. What's ordinary mind in that moment? What's ordinary mind when you're eating an ice cream cone? Ordinary mind. If you have ordinary mind, do you need another mind to know it, to check for it, to grasp after it? So I'm going to go on now to the commentary. All of these koan in the Mumon Khan have a case, which I read, commentary and a verse. So Mumon appends to these stories his first commentary, which is a way of pointing you, orienting you. So based on what I've just said about this case, let's read the commentary. Mumon says, Joshu suddenly brought up the question to Nansen, who explained it. But though the tile is disintegrating and the ice dissolving, the drain is still blocked up. Even though Joshu has come to a realization, he must delve into it for another 30 years before he can understand it fully. So Mumon here is pointing at this way of Zen, which isn't done with when your mind cracks open a bit and you understand something from a fresh standpoint, because the old habit patterns are still there. They tend to pull us back, and it takes a long time of dedicated, diligent practice to gradually loosen those things, to deepen our understanding, to pass what they call countless Dharma gates. It's a process. So in this particular story, Joshu, it says here the tile is disintegrating. What's this tile standing apart? This mind, this complicated mind standing apart from his actual experience. The ice, this frozen self, is beginning to dissolve and flow and spread. But the drain is blocked up because there are habit patterns. So this is an admonition. This is a warning of Mumon. He's warning us, don't think it's so simple that Joshu here at age 19 heard nonsense say these things and his work was done. Now we'll go to the verse. Hundreds of flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer and snow in winter. If your mind is not clouded with unnecessary things, every day is the best day of your life. This is where Mumon really helps you here, really helps you. Points directly at it. He's pointing at ordinary mind. There's a wonderful saying by Dogen. He said, mind, and this is mind with a capital M, this thing that Zen students throughout the ages have so diligently, deeply, with great ardor, search for, says mind is no other than mountains and rivers and the great wide earth, the sun, the moon, and the stars. This is ordinary mind. So we'll end there tonight.